This episode is brought to you by FX's The Veil, starring Elizabeth Moss. FX's The Veil is an international spy thriller that follows two women as they play a deadly game of truth and lies on the road from Istanbul to Paris and London. One woman has a secret, and the other has a mission to reveal it before thousands of lives are lost. FX's The Veil premieres April 30th, only on Hulu.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hi, I'm Bobby, and I'm your friend who knows just a little bit too much about pop culture. Welcome to your weekly meeting of Pop Culture Fanatics Anonymous. Holiday time means good times with good people and just an overall jolly good feeling. We get characters like Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer, Frosty the Snowman, and of course Santa Claus to spend every single holiday season with, and they've quickly become symbols of the holiday season, and it makes us feel good. But what about those characters who aren't exactly the most jovial for the season? What about those characters that, for lack of a better term, are a bit of a Grinch? The Grinch is one of the most prominent holiday figures, and yet the grouchiest and crabbiest of the bunch, but why are we so enamored with him? This week, we're taking a deep dive into the pop culture history of the original mean one, the Grinch. So if that sounds good to you, let's get started. So, the pop culture journey of the Grinch starts all the way back in the first half of the 20th century, obviously with the books. Obviously, How the Grinch Stole Christmas is a very, very popular book written by Dr. Seuss, aka Theodore Seuss Geisel. We all know it. We've probably all read it, I would assume. But did you know that the Grinch actually was mentioned a little bit earlier than the children's book? The children's book came out in 1957, and the first use of the word Grinch was used as early as 1953 in a book called Scrambled Egg Super, which was like one of the books that was kind of taken out of the Seuss rotation of books. So it's not one that's super readily available, but the word Grinch was used first in that book, of course, by Dr. Seuss. And then again, it was used in 1955 in an issue of Red Book in a poem, even though in that poem, it's not really like talking about the being the Grinch. It's more of just a term for someone who's being a little bit crabby and mean and rude, obviously. So that brings us then to 1957 with How the Grinch Stole Christmas, which is the book, which was massively successful, literally just peak successful, super successful book for Dr. Seuss, read by millions of children the world over, probably still read to this day, if I had to guess. And yeah, it's a book that kind of spawned this entire franchise for this one character. Of course, just to lay the groundwork, because the story will be the same for pretty much every iteration. Of course, as you remember, the story of How the Grinch Stole Christmas, it follows the Grinch. He lives on high on top of this mountain whose name I'm completely forgetting. And he lives on this mountain and he lives above the Whos in Whosville. The Whos in Whosville, like, they go all out for Christmas. Like, they are that family in your neighborhood that, like, has oodles and oodles of lights and blow up things in their yard and like fake snow if you live in a place where it doesn't snow. Like, they look like Christmas is their thing. So imagine that family, but a whole town. Everyone in the town is like that. That's the Whos in Whoville. So the Grinch lives on high. He watches them, and their holiday cheer really just irks the hell out of him. And so he's like, you know what? I'm going to put a stop to this. I have seen enough. I have heard enough. I will not deal with their Christmas cheer. And so he pulls together this very fiendish plot to basically ransack all the houses in Whoville on Christmas Eve and steal all of their presents that Santa has gifted to them, thinking that that will stop their Christmas cheer. And then, of course, you know, Christmas is not about toys or whatever it is. It's about the people and, you know, community, blah, 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 whatever, right? So then the Grinch is moved by this massive display of love and compassion, and his heart, which was three sizes too small, grows three sizes too big, which sounds like a medical issue, but, you know, it is what it is, and he's forever changed. End of story. We all kiss, make up, and go home. That's how the Grinch Stole Christmas. Very straightforward book because it's a children's book. It was published by Random House in 1957. It was also published in an issue of Red Book. And it is meant to be a, all Seuss books kind of have some type of, you know, like big message, big picture, right? You know, the Lorax talks about like, you know, like environmental issues and our need to protect the environment and protect the earth because we only get one. And the Grinch talks about commercialization of Christmas and the feeling that Christmas is only about the things that you get and, you know, presents and all that stuff. But it's not really about that. It's, there are multiple reasons for the season, yada, yada, yada. You got it. So the book, obviously, like I said, well received, people loved it. And so that eventually spawned them wanting to bring it into this, at the time, very new medium of television. It was thought that children would, you know, enjoy it. And so the choice to turn it into a television series then came up, or a television TV movie special. How television worked back in the day wasn't as clear cut as it is now, so I guess it would be considered like a TV special, but it also could be considered a film pretty much. So it exists in that weird in between period, right? By 1966, How the Grinch Stole Christmas makes its way to the small screen, aka via television. And really, the special was started because of World War II. So, like I said, Dr. Seuss, whose real name was Theodore Seuss Geisel, he was too old for the draft at the time of World War II. So, in lieu of that, he decided to join the Signal Corps, which was basically a group that of directors, filmmakers, etc., that made movies to support the war effort. So it was through that he would meet an animator by the name of Chuck Jones, which, if you know anything about animation, you know that this he is a big figure. He created Bugs Bunny. Like, this is a big guy. He's a very famous animator. One of my favorite things from Chuck Jones is called Duck Amuck. It's kind of like widely considered to be like one of the greatest like pieces of animation, and a lot of that can be credited to Chuck Jones. Also, just he's just a really an amazing like animator, and a lot of Looney Tunes and everything. He is kind of the mastermind. That's he didn't create the Looney Tunes, but he was a big creative force behind it. So through Signal Corps, they would meet. And they both kind of convened together on wanting to do this special for How the Grinch Stole Christmas. So it was actually Chuck Jones who convinced Seuss to turn the book into an animated special. He was like, there's a market for it. People love animation. There's something here. We should do it. So they were like, okay, let's do it. And Seuss brought on Chuck Jones to do the animation for it. And if you're familiar with his style, you can definitely tell that like Chuck Jones's style is very present throughout this. Like, it very much feels in the vein of Looney Tunes, especially around this time, which was like the mid-60s. Like, it definitely has that feel. So they're getting kind of the process for creating this special together. They bring in an actor by the name of Boris Karloff, and Boris Karloff is the he is both the Grinch and the narrator, but he does not sing the song. The song is sung by Thurl Ravenscroft, which is an insane name, absolutely bonkers name, just for a person. That's nuts, actually. That's insane. But Thurl Ravenscroft is the singing Like, he is the person who sings You're a Mean One, Mr. Grinch. And if you've heard that song, you're like, this guy kind of sounds very familiar. I feel like I've heard his voice elsewhere. Well, you have. Thurl Ravenscroft was like a very prolific singer, but he also did a lot of voice work because he had a very unique, deep voice. So if you've ever eaten cereal, particularly Frosted Flakes, he was the original Tony the Tiger, and he voiced them for a very long time. And he's also in The Haunted Mansion. He sings in The Haunted Mansion. He has one of the like singing busts, and actually, if you've been on the Haunted Mansion, this is for my Disney Parks people. I promise I will go very quickly with this. I won't stay on this for too long. But if you've been to the Haunted Mansion and the part of the ride where they get to where the busts are, Thurl Ravenscroft is the one that kind of looks like Walt Disney, and a lot of people think is Walt Disney. It's not. It's Thurl Ravenscroft. So he sings on that. He sang in the Country Beer Jamboree, Pirates of the Caribbean. Like, he's everywhere. He's also Fritz in the Enchanted Tiki Room. So you know Thurl Ravenscroft. But you also know Boris Karloff as well, because he is the original Frankenstein. He was the first... he was like kind of one of the most prolific people to play Frankenstein, even though we haven't really gotten many more people to play Frankenstein, to be fair. But he was in the original like Universal Movie Monsters version of Frankenstein. And he is in this playing the Grinch. So during production of it, it actually came at kind of a good-ish time for animated TV specials. So it comes after A Charlie Brown Christmas, which was kind of was a bit experimental for its time. No one really knew if people were going to be super receptive to it, and so it didn't get a ton of budget as far as, you know, animating the thing goes. Now, it made its money back for sure, but it was kind of a little bit up in the air. So because of the success of that and all the ratings that it brought in, MGM, who was producing the special How the Grinch Stole Christmas, gave them a budget of $315,000. Now, for animation at the time, that was a lot of money for a TV animated special. In like mid-2010s money, that's about like $2.4 million to produce a animated TV special, which is a really good amount of money to do that. So they got quite a bit of money, which was apparently four times more than what the creators behind A Charlie Brown Christmas got. So yeah, and I think it works. Like the production and animation for How the Grinch Stole Christmas, the animated special, still holds up, surprisingly. And that's probably due in large part to its pretty decent budget that it got. So it premieres in 1966. It is given like kind of all of the pomp and circumstance. It is this like massive hit. People really, really love it. And obviously it is played for eons and eons and eons, it feels, but it's played every single year, and it's due in large part to the success of the first premiere of it. And it's definitely like in the echelon of your, you know, A Charlie Brown Christmas, Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer, Frosty the Snowman, like things like that. Like, they just have become classics. To provide a little bit more fun facts, and maybe to answer a question that often gets asked, I guess, of the Grinch, I suppose. So if you ever wondered why the Grinch is green, because he doesn't have to be green, he just is green. If you read the original book, the Grinch was black and white because the book was mainly in black and white. But at the time of the special, color TV was still relatively new. So they, with a little bit of the extra money that they had, were like, okay, we're going to opt to make this a little bit more colorful. And in turn, the Grinch, you know, becomes more colorful than just being black and white. So apparently Chuck Jones chose to make the Grinch green kind of on a whim. He basically said that he kept getting rental cars that were in that specific shade of green, and he was just like, okay, I'll just make the Grinch this color green. I wish it was a much more exciting reason. But he just, I guess that shade of green was top of mind. And he is just like, all right, I keep getting this color green car. So I'm making this character green. And that is why the Grinch is green. So now you know. There is actually, and this is not quite a holiday thing, but there is actually a sequel to this special. That's why I said it's a weird in between of like a TV special and like a movie, because it got a sequel. And it got a sequel in 1978 called Halloween is Grinch Night, which was obviously made for Halloween. And it wasn't nearly as popular as the original, but it did win a Primetime Emmy for Outstanding Children's Program in 1978. And if you have seen Halloween is Grinch Night, that is quite a curious award to receive, because it is not scary, but it's not fun. Like, it's got that very shaky 70s look to it. And it doesn't look quite as the same as How the Grinch Stole Christmas. I imagine the budget was nowhere near as much. But yeah, there's technically a sequel to How the Grinch Stole Christmas called Halloween is Grinch Night. The full 25-minute special is on YouTube. You can watch it. I recommend it if you're interested in the Grinch as a character, and if you're interested in like a different kind of story for the Grinch, because most iterations of the Grinch tend to follow the same story that I told you at the top of the episode, where he's like, oh, I hate Christmas, I'm gonna steal their presents, and that kind of tends to be it. But this is something completely different, and arguably something much scarier. So, you know, if you're interested, highly recommend you check it out.
It's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
The Grinch has now, I think, cemented itself as like a Christmas classic, right? Like, people are loving the Grinch. I think they love it because he's different. He's not in the grand scheme of holiday time and, you know, the specials that we watch. They're all very saccharine and sweet and caring and wholesome. And I think the Grinch was just a really good interruption to that and gave us a character that eventually comes around to that, you know, that feeling of, you know, feeling Christmas cheer and everything like that. But he's pretty gruff on the surface, right? Like, he is very kind of abrasive. And not kind of, he's incredibly abrasive. I have a running theory that the Grinch and Oscar the Grouch are somehow familial. Like, I think they are in each other's family tree, perhaps cousins, twice removed. I'm not sure, but the vibes, they're green, they're scruffy, and they're mean. So I feel like there's some family ties going on there. Don't quote me on that, but I think there's something there for sure. For sure. So moving on, we get the Grinch in kind of like other little glimpses of TV specials, especially like Seuss TV specials. You get Halloween is Grinch Night in 1982. Marvel greenlit a special or TV film called The Grinch, Grinches the Cat in the Hat. Okay. what does that mean? I don't know. Don't ask me. I don't know. We also get the Grinch in a couple of other Seuss-themed things, namely the short-lived, I think, show that was on Nick Jr. called The Wubbulous World of Dr. Seuss, which is this, like, puppet show with, like, Dr. Seuss characters. It was mainly the Cat in the Hat, but other, like, Seuss characters make an appearance, I think. maybe the Lorax has made an appearance. I know, like, the Sneetches and everything. Like, the like those characters that you know from the books. They're all in that show. And it was, like, a puppet show. And a little side tangent fun fact. This is, I'm letting you into the world of my brain. Like, all these things are connected by little webs. And I, like, remember hearing one thing. And then I'm like, ah, okay, yeah, I want to tie that together. The Whoopula's World of Dr. Seuss premiered in 1996, and if you may recall, another famous show for Nick Jr. also premiered in 1996, and that was a little show called Blue's Clues. So it was kind of a, I've told the story on a bunch of different platforms, but it kind of was a Lion King Pocahontas thing. If you don't know, famously, the Lion King and Pocahontas were in production at the same time at Walt Disney Animation Studios. Pocahontas was thought to be kind of the cash cow. That was going to be the big winner. It's going to pull in all the awards, et cetera, et cetera. And Lion King was kind of just like the B-team movie. Lion King goes on, biggest animated film of all time. And Pocahontas is a movie that happened. The similar thing happening here with The Whoopla's World of Dr. Seuss and with Blue's Clues. So Nickelodeon thought at the time, like, ah, this big property in The Whoopla's World of Dr. Seuss, it's Dr. Seuss, it's timeless, kids love it. You know, a lot of the attention and focus from the network went there. Not to say that they didn't care about Blue's Clues, because clearly they did enough to green light it and put money behind the production of it. But it just wasn't the focus of the studio at the time. They were going to go with the property that's already kind of cemented itself. And so, as it always goes, when you're not paying attention to one property, which we've seen time and time again, a couple weeks ago I talked about DreamWorks doing the same thing to Shrek, and it goes into the stratosphere being this massive movie. The same thing happens to Blue's Clues. The Whoopla's World of Dr. Seuss was not on for very long, I don't think. Not necessarily the most remembered thing in the world either. I think it's one of those shows that you're just like, yeah, I kind of remember that. But it only ran for 2 years, whereas Blue's Clues was the smash hit. Kids loved it. It ran from 1996 to 2006. In the first initial run, it got a ton of spinoffs and shows, and now it's got this new show called Blue's Clues and You, and it's every, like, it's this massive franchise. And it's funny to think that it didn't start out that way. Nickelodeon wasn't, you know, thinking this is the ticket, you know. So yeah, that's as it always goes in pop culture. We see it happen time and time again. Just a little side tangent, a little fun fact for you. You're welcome. So moving back to other places that we've seen the Grinch, we saw him in a lot of 70s and 80s specials. We saw him in The Whoopla's World of Dr. Seuss. And now we see him in perhaps his greatest showing to me. It was one of my favorite Christmas movies. Depending on what day you ask me, I would probably say this is my favorite Christmas movie, and that is the 2000 holiday classic, Ron Howard's How the Grinch Stole Christmas. Now, Ron Howard's How the Grinch Stole Christmas is a film that has been in my life for a very long time, before I even saw the full thing. Now, you know, when we go to school and elementary school, we have, like, Christmas parties and we watch movies and stuff. We weren't watching Ron Howard's The Grinch. I think it was because it was too scary. And so I didn't see it in full until I was a little bit older. But the first place that I saw, like, mention of it, or, like, saw a trailer for it, was on a VHS tape for Shrek. It was like, you know how VHS tapes used to play trailers for other things ahead of it. So they played the trailer for E.T., the 20th anniversary special, for Spirit, the horse movie, and for Ron Howard's How the Grinch Stole Christmas. And so because I wore that Shrek VHS out, I wore it out. That thing's got miles on it. I wore it out. I kept seeing this trailer for The Grinch, for this movie. And so eventually I watched it for myself, and it became one of my absolute favorite holiday movies. I love it. It's so fun. Obviously, it's Jim Carrey as The Grinch, which, what more can you ask for? And it's this incredibly insane movie. And now, as a you know, in my like pop culture analytical brain or whatever, I view it as like a great Christmas movie and just a great holiday film. But also, it is one of the most ambitious and insanely effective feats of visual effects in film. I think it is, it's one of the greatest like showings of that via hair, makeup, and costuming. Like, they turned real people into Whos, and Whos look not like real people. They're kind of like very otherworldly looking, and so we'll get into it a little bit later. But I just think the visual effects and of the film really kind of cemented the movie just beyond a holiday sense, right? Because sometimes we don't often think about holiday movies outside of the context of them being holiday movies. Like, we don't talk about, you know, Home Alone and the greatest movies of all time conversation always, because we're like, well, it's a Christmas movie, so it's, you know, you're not judging it by the same brush as you would just like a regular film. But I really do think that The Grinch should be considered amongst that conversation, at least for like films with the best visual effects, because my goodness, it's insane. Like, it's nuts. It is very, very nuts. So Ron Howard's The Grinch is probably like one of the, I don't know, most prolific showings of The Grinch, and it starts exactly kind of how the other one does. The Grinch is grinching out. In this one, he's a little less. The funny thing is to watch throughout the pop culture journey of The Grinch is every iteration kind of captures a general essence of The Grinch, but there's also like little things in each one that kind of delineates one from the other. So The Grinch in the first one was kind of just this very like super grouchy guy, like doesn't want to be bothered, like could care less, like very dejected, but just is like annoyed, obviously, at the incessant cheer of these Whos. And then Ron Howard's The Grinch, How the Grinch Stole Christmas, in that version, The Grinch is a lot more proactively antagonistic. Like, he is a lot more like pranky, and he like wants to go out of his way to inconvenience the Whos. Like, he goes out of his way to wreak havoc on these very innocent people, and not to, well, most of them very innocent. Obviously, in this movie we get the backstory that the Grinch was actually raised by Whos, and he was obsessed with Martha May Huvier, who's played by Christine Baranski, who is like the only one who doesn't have a Grinch nose, or like doesn't have a super pronounced one. It's weird. But he has this crush on her, and everyone is like, oh, she'll never like you because you're green and hairy. And that's what causes his villain origin story to like hate the Whos. And then he eventually, you know, comes around. But like, for the most part, like, he's constantly trying to wreak havoc on them, seemingly outside of a Christmas context. It seems like year round he is causing trouble and mayhem for the Whos, for things. So Ron Howard's The Grinch, I think, has a lot of, you know, moving parts to it. Like I said, it's this really good holiday film, but it's this really good visual effects feat. Obviously, the makeup and hair were done by the absolutely incredible Rick Baker. If you know Rick Baker, you've seen his work. Like, he is just the top of the heap when it comes to makeup and hair for film, especially like special effects makeup and hair. Like, he's done like quite a bit of stuff, and it took a really long time to fine tune how the Grinch was going to look. So a lot of the feats of special effects for Rick Baker and his team came down to figuring out a way to create the Grinch that harkens back to the original book and the animated TV special, and feels not too scary, because the Grinch is not, when translated to real life, could be incredibly terrifying, but also could be a little too cartoony if they lean too heavily into prosthetics. And then also they had the added layer of making sure that Jim Carrey's incredibly animated expressions could still shone through the makeup. So they're juggling all of that at one time. And they went through multiple tests where they went from putting him into really heavy prosthetics to where you can't really tell it's Jim Carrey underneath all of the prosthetics. They went to just kind of painting him green, and they were just like, it's probably not gonna work. And I think some studio executives were like, what are you gonna do, just paint Jim Carrey green? And so they tried, and they were just like, this isn't really anything. And then Rick Baker himself does a makeup demo to show, like, okay, I think I found the perfect balance, but in order to do it, I've got to put it on myself so that, you know, people can see what it'll look like, and then we'll put Jim in it if you guys like it. So on YouTube you can find a video of Rick Baker in the Grinch makeup, and it shows that, like, kind of anyone could be the Grinch visually. Obviously, like, as far as how he acts and everything, that's definitely a lot of Jim Carrey. But the makeup ended up looking great, and so that, I think, helps in large part with the timelessness of this film, is the fine tuning that Rick Baker had done to figure out how this character that has only existed within the context of an animated book, a 2D book, and then a 2D animated TV special, how do you bring that into this full body person? And obviously he figured it out. That, coupled with the amazing costume design of Rita Ryack, who costumed all the Whos in these very whimsical outfits. Like, the Whos are so fun to look at from a costume perspective in every scene that they're in, because they're very over the top. They're very holiday cheer. Like, their hair is super crazy. Like, you know, the things that they're wearing and everything. Like, it's all, like, very functional but fun fashion, right? So Rita Ryack pulled a lot of inspiration for the Who's wardrobe from the 50s, which would make sense from when the book was coming out. And to research, Ryack would consult 50s cookbooks, especially for the food themed outfits. If you remember, Cindy Lou Who and her family are in, I think it's like for the holiday Whobilation or whatever, which is the big celebration festival thing, they're wearing like picnic basket themed outfits, and they're just very adorable. Also, speaking of adorable, for a lot of the costumes, Rita Ryack actually, like, the ones that look like they were made by little kids, they were made by little kids. She consulted a class of second graders to help create a lot of the Whobilation costumes, and it is the most adorable thing I've ever seen. It's so precious. One thing that's not so precious is that, obviously, with a film like this and the special effects of it, it comes with a lot of grunt work, and that manifested itself in Jim Carrey being in makeup for hours on end, hours to get into the makeup, hours to get out of the makeup, and it was driving him insane. Obviously, you know, rightfully so. I think by the time they were able to get the process down, it maybe took about 4 hours, but it started off at like 8. So like 8 to get him into the Grinch garb, 8 to get him out. Like, it was insane. Like, 8 hours is a long time to get someone into a costume. You then do a full day of shooting, and then another 8 to get them out of the costume, or like 6 or 4, whatever it is. Like, a lot of time to do that. And so in that kerfuffle, Jim Carrey he kind of blew his lid a little bit out of frustration, because he felt like he was suffocated by the makeup. It was very, like, and if you look at it, it's very, like, intense makeup. It's not just, like, you know, a little bit of foundation and we're calling it a day. He was very, you know, it was a lot that was going on. So one day he kind of blows up at this member of the makeup team named Kazuhiro Tsuji, and he yelled at him so bad that it caused Kazuhiro Tsuji to leave the production. He was like, I'm not coming back. I'm not going to be yelled at. Like, I'm just not going to do that. And so basically, the filmmakers, Ron Howard, producers, and Carrie had to call Tsuji themselves and ask him, we please like return to the production of the film. And Tsuji, being the big thinker, that he was like, I will come back if you help sponsor my application for my green card. And they did. They held to that. Tsuji got his green card, and he also got an Oscar for his work on The Darkest Hour. I mean, he's the MVP of this movie. I'm just saying. So that's one of my favorite pop culture stories, like him leveraging his situation to lead, which led him to an Oscar, which is incredible. So like I said, so many visual special effects on The Grinch that are just amazing. This is coupled with the fact that Jim Carrey is absolutely hilarious in this movie. There are just certain parts of this movie that I watch it pretty much every single year, and I laugh pretty much every single time I see anything from this movie. It never fails to make me laugh. I think it's one of the greatest holiday movies ever. It's super fun. I have so many other fun facts about The Grinch, and I made a video last year on TikTok, which did really, really well. And I think I there's even more things to talk about with The Grinch, so I might do a little bit of a continuation for that. But this is probably the biggest showing of The Grinch. I think this is the version that people super remember, and I think it's either due in part to the bringing this very whimsical world into, you know, the real world, and how they did that and how well they did that, or Carrie's, like, you know, really physical comedy, and like even just some of the just the writing is just super fun, even though I think he ad-libbed like quite a bit of stuff. It's one of my favorites. So the pop culture journey of The Grinch kind of does come to a bit of a halt around this time. We don't really see much from him, because I really do think How the Grinch Stole Christmas kind of knocked it out of the park, honestly. Like, I think so many people were like, yeah, we don't need another one. I think we're good. But capitalism is a never-ending machine. And if you have an idea that has been, you know, done well, and you've kind of laid it to rest, capitalism will find a way to resurrect it and do it again, even when no one truly asked. And so that's how you get the 2018 Grinch, which is animated, CGI animated. So the Grinch has kind of run the gamut of all representations. Like, he's kind of touching every little bit of every corner possible, pretty much. But then we get the Grinch. It's just called The Grinch, because I think most people were calling the Ron Howard movie just The Grinch, but this one is simply called The Grinch, and it came out in 2018. It stars Benedict Cumberbatch as The Grinch, which I think was a choice, certainly. An interesting one at that. It was a very interesting choice. But it was released on November 9th, 2018. So a little bit early, a little bit before the official holiday season. But it brought in $512 million. It's technically one of the highest, if not the highest grossing Christmas film of all time. And it is the highest grossing Dr. Seuss film of all time, for sure. Now, I don't want you to think that I'm completely against the Seuss cinematic universe films, because I love Horton Hears the Who. But it wasn't bad. It wasn't great. It wasn't bad. You're right. I think when I was talking about the Grinches being different in every single iteration, this one is no different. This Grinch, to me, just kind of felt bored. He just feels bored. He's similar in the vein of the first Grinch, like the animated special Grinch, where he's just kind of like, he doesn't want to be bothered and he's over it. But this one just seems just like just completely bored from start to finish. It's similar in the vein of story, nothing too crazy, nothing too different. But, you know, some things are thrown about. But, I mean, with $512 million at the box office, somebody like this. So, you know, hats off to 2018 Grinch, I guess. But that kind of brings us to the end of the Grinch's pop culture journey. He is one of those Christmas figures that I think people love. And if you've walked into any Home Goods, TJ Maxx, or Marshalls, moms really love the Grinch. I think it's like a fun little cheeky, like, oh, like I hate Christmas, but I secretly really love Christmas. Like, I think he's become the the figure for that type of like vibe. Like, you will find Grinch stuff aplenty. I feel like you can find the Grinch easier than you can find Santa. But the Grinch has just quickly become, and I say quickly because it's right at about 50 years old, as far as like the character's recognition goes, like a 50-ish year old property that has quickly become an easy symbol of the holiday season. But I think the story of it is pretty timeless. I think the message of, you know, not making the holiday so commercial is very interesting, especially in retrospect to the fact that it has gotten three different films / specials. It's an interesting conundrum to consider. But I love the Grinch, obviously. I wouldn't spend damn near an hour talking about the Grinch if I didn't love him. I just think I am a sucker for a bit of a cynical character that secretly has a heart of gold, and the Grinch is so indicative of that. And I will definitely be watching Ron Howard's How the Grinch Stole Christmas once again, like I do every year. I will be watching it again this year with pride because I love the Grinch. I hope you enjoyed today's episode, Afternooners. If you don't know, the Afternooners is my name for all of us. So if you've made it to the end of the episode, congratulations. You're an Afternooner now. If you like this episode, don't forget to rate and review this podcast. If you had a good time, it helps out the pod. You get to tell me how you're feeling about the pod, and I get that sweet hit of praise and validation that is my life force and keeps me going. If you want to know where else to find me on the internet, you can find me at The Afternoon Special on TikTok or Instagram or over on Twitter at Hi, I'm Bobby, HIIMBOBBI. And if you're thinking, Bobby, I need to binge every Grinch thing imaginable, especially that Halloween is Grinch night thing. I think I'm ready to divulge into that. Go for it. Godspeed. But when you're ready, I've left all of that information in the description down below just for you. You're welcome. As you could probably tell, I spent a lot of hours researching that scruffly green man Grinch person. And that means I put on a little bit of music while I'm doing so. And so this week's episode was powered not by a holiday song, but you know me, I've recommended a couple K-pop songs here every once in a while, but I have a new obsession, guys, and it's Stray Kids. The group is called Stray Kids, and they have a song called Backdoor, and it's another one called Maniac, and another one called God's Menu, and I have been listening to those on repeat for the past week. I cannot free myself from listening to these songs, and I will be shocked if they don't make it into my next year Spotify Wrapped. I would be absolutely surprised by that. So that is my holiday rec. But also just You're a Mean One, Mr. Grinch. I think it's great. Any version of it. I like Tyler, the Creator's version for the 2018 Grinch is probably my favorite part of that film. Jim Carrey's version is funny just from how he delivers the lines. But then also the original, the OG with Thurl Ravenscroft, it's just a classic. It always puts me in the Christmas spirit. So all the versions of You're a Mean One, Mr. Grinch, as well as Stray Kids was what this episode is powered by. I hope you enjoyed this week's chat and that you'll join me again next week for another pop culture deep dive. Later days, friends.
Hi, just checking in and seeing if you might want to step away from the noise of the world for just a moment and connect back to you. If so, join me on my podcast, Letting It Settle with Michael Gallion, where we'll explore mindfulness, self-love, and personal growth as I share practical insights and tools to hopefully help inspire you to start to take charge of your mental and emotional well-being. Search for Letting It Settle with Michael Gallion on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you're listening now.
Whether you're in a relationship, single, or recently heartbroken, you could be navigating some tough stuff. And it really can be challenging to do this on your own. We all need help when it comes to our relationships, very specifically, our love lives. I'm Jillian, and each week on my podcast, Jillian on Love, I share skills on how to strengthen our relationships, how to build a stronger sense of self, and how to heal heartbreak and choose better partners. Learn how to start making change today and search for Jillian on Love wherever you're listening now.